I'm glad menopause has passed. Some advantage of being an older woman. It's fun to be, actually it's been more fun to be in the audience this year and listening to our great speakers, but I enjoy seeing all your faces from this perspective. And there's been a lot of teasing been going on about who gets what topic. Well, I chose this one a long time ago when Anne asked me what to speak on. And what a beautiful story I get to talk on, this friendship of David and Jonathan, and just friendship in general. Many of you know I have raised two sons, and we named them Jonathan and David, hope after these two guys in the Bible, hoping that they would become best friends. And praise God, they are best friends. And I love talking about friendship, because especially with girlfriends, because I was raised in a family with three brothers, and then I had two sons, so I was surrounded by males most of my life and all their friends. And so I think that's one reason girlfriends are so special to me, and I value them so much. And I thought today, who doesn't long for a close friend? We all want that. And the friendship that we see in our scripture today of Jonathan and David was an instant bond, a very unusual friendship. And once in a while that happens. But I think for the most part, to have good friends takes energy and unselfishness and even a lot of work. And so I want to talk about that this morning, this special friendship of Jonathan and David, and then the kind of friendships we would like to have. And I've set a little table for tea here for you this morning. And I love tea parties. And I don't know lots of you at all. Some of you I know a little bit, and some of you I know very well. But I know that if you could come up here and sit with me and we could have a little cup of tea together for half an hour, we would become much closer. And I love a tradition that's in Europe where every afternoon they have a little tea party. And we have visited on mission trips, Daniel, Marla, Watts in Poland years ago. And every afternoon after a really busy day, Marla would bring out the teapot and we would sit down and be refreshed by a cup of tea. And I like to think of friendship as that refreshment. Tea is refreshing for our bodies, and friendship is refreshing for our souls. Paul says in the book of Philemon, "Your love has given me great encouragement because you have refreshed the hearts of the saints." Isn't that beautiful? And then Paul says again, Philemon, "Yes, I want some benefit from you in the Lord. Refresh my heart in Christ." Such a beautiful picture of refreshment. So I want you to think of this little tea party. I wish you could all come up here with me. But since you can't, what I want you to do is turn to someone close to you and give them a big hug right now. Okay, come back. Don't you feel more refreshed? More refreshed, more energized? That just does it. There's something about that touch, and that's what friendship can do. It can lift our spirits. It can encourage us. And I hope that what I have to say today will be encouraging to all of you and you to each other. We're going to look first this morning at Jonathan and David's friendships and then at ours. And I went back a few chapters from our lesson today in 1 Samuel to find everything I could about Jonathan. And as I read about him, and we've talked about him a little bit in previous lessons, but I really saw such a neat man. He was a trustworthy man. He was a good warrior. He was wise. He believed and trusted in God. He worked closely with his father, and it appears that he actually had quite a good relationship with Saul. He was a good man who would have been very capable of taking over the throne of his father, David. And when I was pregnant with my first child, I was studying in Bible study fellowship, and we were studying about Jonathan. And so I was lying in bed one night, and I told my husband, "Jonathan was really a neat man, and we don't hear as much about him. We hear much more about David and his kingship." And Terry said, "You know what? I was reading the same thing." And I said, "I think that would be a great name if we had a son." And I had never felt him move, and right then, he jumped in the womb. I use that term. And I said, Terry, feel. And he felt, and he did it again. And we didn't want to tell people because it sounded a little eerie, but we called him Jonathan from that time on. So Jonathan, the character in the Bible, just has real meaning for us. And I was thinking, it's been interesting as we've studied different Bible characters. In this case, we did Eli the priest, who was a good priest, but his sons were bad. So often there's a good man, but he's not able to pass down to his sons, and they aren't good. In this story, we have the opposite. We have Saul, who wasn't a good man, and we have his son, who became such a wonderful man. It would be interesting to know how all that took place, but we do know that Jonathan trusted God. So I think just knowing that about Jonathan makes it even more amazing that Jonathan so instantaneously loved David. And so, and really, it seems like he knew even at that point when he met David that David would probably take over the throne and take Jonathan's place. Saul already knew at this point when the two, Jonathan and David, met that he wasn't going to be king, or at least he'd been told that. I'm not sure Saul believed it. I think his whole life he fought against that possibility that maybe if he could kill David, he could still be king and his son could be. But we find in, and I'm just going to read a few passages. If you want to turn in, I'll be in 1 Samuel. This is in 1 Samuel 13:13. And Samuel's talking to Saul. So this is a bit way before David, the story of David and Goliath that Anne taught us. And Samuel said to Saul, "You have done foolishly. You have not kept the command of the Lord your God with which he commanded you. For then the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." Pretty clear. But I don't think Saul really wanted to believe it. And then in 15:23, again, Saul is told, "Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has rejected you from being king." Pretty clear, but I'm not sure what Saul wanted to believe that. And I thought, it's so interesting. Saul never really had in his mind the things of God as David did, or as Jonathan did. And then we come to the fight with Jonathan, or David and Goliath. And I wonder if Saul had mentioned any of the stuff to his son Jonathan about him maybe being rejected as king. We don't really know, but it seems like Jonathan had some knowledge. And that's, again, why this amazing love that Jonathan had for David was something. And as we studied David and Goliath, there was a context of a verse that I had never seen before. And the verse is, "The soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David." And I had that in a cross stitch in my boys' bathroom most of their lives. They look at that. But I didn't know where it fell. And it came immediately after David slew Goliath. And I thought that was interesting. Saul called him over after that. And he said to him, "Whose son is this young man?" And I thought, how funny he didn't know it. He had already spent time giving David his armor and everything, but somehow he didn't seem to know who he was. Saul just seemed so self-centered. And David said, "I'm the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." Sorry. And as soon as he has finished speaking to Saul, then that's that verse, "The soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David." And I thought, wow. As far as we know, Jonathan had never even seen David before. But what did he see in David to make him love him instantly? And I thought, we have to use our imagination. Don't you wish the Bible would say more? But I thought he got to see him, his bravery, his total trust in God. He didn't like Goliath mocking the children of Israel. He had skill with his sling and his stones. He was humble. Whatever, and you guys could probably come up with more as you really think, what on earth did he see in that fight that made him love David so much? I always thought that these two young men were pretty much the same age, but from our lesson notes today, it says that Jonathan was probably 20 years older than David, too, which again makes it such an interesting story, because here It's a young boy who's going to take over the kingship. And here's Jonathan, who's very capable and maybe 20 years older. And the beautiful thing when they met each other in 18, it says after Jonathan said he loved him, Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David, and his armor and even his sword and his bow and his belt. And David went out and was successful. Jonathan was so unlike his father. And Cherry talked about jealousy last week and how awful it is. And we see no jealousy at all in Jonathan. It's just a beautiful example of total humility and seeing things through God's eyes and not his own self. Jonathan's expression of love and friendship to David is one of the models that is a beautiful portrait of a covenant in God's word. God made many covenants with his people. And according to a commentary I read by Beth Moore, a covenant has three parts: a sign, a sacrifice, and a solemn oath. And in this story, the covenant, we see Jonathan initiated the friendship just like God does with us. And the sign was he gave David his robe and his tunic and his sword and his weapons. His sacrifice, we know that he was willing to give up the throne. He saw in David a character in David that would make him be fit to be king, and he gave all his right, abdicated it to David. Such humility. I just really want to think about that as I really think about them as men and warriors, that he would be that humble. Jonathan had in mind the things of God at the risk of his own favor and position. Do you know many people like that? There's not a lot that would do that. I thought if we know them, we want to spend time with them and pray for them. And then they made a solemn oath together, and that comes in our chapter for today in 1 Samuel 20, starting in verse 13. And David and Jonathan are talking. And I'm just going to start in the middle of it. And Jonathan says, "May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. I am still alive. If I am still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord that I may not die. And do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever, when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." And Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies." And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. There's just amazing friendship and love. And then in the rest of our lesson today, David and Jonathan make a deal with each other. And I can just, reminds me of my boys and two brothers. And David's convinced that Saul is out to get him. And Jonathan just can't really believe that. So they made this deal. And David said, "I'm not going to come for dinner for 3 nights. And if Saul is happy about it, then things are good. But if he's angry, then I know I'm in trouble." So the first night, everything, Saul didn't say much. Second night, he asked Jonathan where David was. And they had made this deal that Jonathan would say he went to Bethlehem to fulfill a vow. And Saul became very angry. And I think it's really funny what he says. In a way, he says to Jonathan, it's not funny, but he says, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman." Right? Doesn't sound like Adam. "God, the woman you gave me, it's not my fault," Saul says. "It's that perverse, rebellious woman that I married. It's her fault. Do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your shame? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, you nor your kingdom shall be established. Send him to me. He will surely die." So again, Saul's trying to thwart God's plan. He doesn't still believe it. He thinks he can work against it. And sometimes I think, don't we try to connive and stuff to maybe think this really won't have to happen? And Jonathan, sweet Jonathan, says, "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" He's protecting David again, not letting any jealousy rule. And what did Saul do? He threw his spear at Jonathan. So Jonathan got it. that Saul really was angry at David. And they had this secret code that they worked out about shooting arrows, and I always thought that was just like boys to do it, because at the end he went out and talked to him anyway. I thought, why didn't you just meet him behind the rock? But I think they had fun thinking of the secret code of shooting arrows. But anyway, the warning was, Saul is after you, David. You're going to have to leave. And so the last time that they really meet together, as far as I know, is in 1 Samuel in our lesson 20, verse 41. And I want to just read that. It's such a touching ending. It says it better than I can. So verse 41 in chapter 20. And as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from beside the stone heap and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. And they kissed one another and wept with one another, David weeping the most. Then Jonathan said to David, go in peace, because we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord shall be between me and you and between my offspring and your offspring forever. And they rose and departed. A short friendship, but what a precious friendship. And we do know later on that David did take Jonathan's crippled son and cared for him, Mephibosheth. And then I also read in, went to 2 Samuel and read about David's lament after Jonathan had been killed. And David said, I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant have you been to me. Your love to me was extraordinary, surpassing the love of women. What a love story of two men, and it was a healthy love story, I want to say. I think this would make a great movie, wouldn't it? I always wish they'd make Bible movies and just keep them to the facts. They're so good, just how they are, of intrigue. We see a story of a king's jealousy, rage, insecurity, lacking God's viewpoint, and no desire to really do God's will. And then we see a prince who gave up his rights, was humble, loved his friend, and wanted the best for him. Jonathan can remind us of a type of Christ, of him giving up his rights for another. God also has a covenant with us that this story models. God chose, he initiated the love for the Jewish nation, and he initiates and chooses us, and his love is what draws us to him. Remember, the covenant has three parts: the sign, the sacrifice, and the solemn oath. And in one place, there's lots of places this is, and in 1 John 4, verses 8 and 10, it says that God showed his love for us in that he sent his son into the world, something we know. That was his sign. His sacrifice, obviously, was giving Jesus as our atoning sacrifice so that we could be saved. And the solemn oath and commitment that God made in that passage, it says, if anyone acknowledges Jesus as God's son, God lives in him and he in us. Isn't that a great promise? And we are living that today. I think the Bible's so cool how everything just flows. I mean, you have this oath way back in Samuel, and it's fulfilled for us in the New Testament. A beautiful story we get to see of friendship. This is a friendship that seems like God's Spirit just worked to cement that friendship immediately. And I think maybe David, as he grew older and didn't have Jonathan, maybe he passed the knowledge of that friendship down to his son Solomon. I would like to think he had to talk about that special friendship. And Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes maybe something that could have been based on the friendship of Jonathan and David, where he says, two are better than one, because they also have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another one to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. Anyway, I thought, wouldn't that be neat if maybe Solomon knew about his dad's friendship and he wrote about it in this way? And that's a good segue for us as friends. What can we learn as friends from Jonathan David's experience and just from life? Not many of us get to have girlfriends, like the friendship Jonathan and David have, where there's that instant bond. But sometimes it happens. But we can do things to build those friendships and get that kind of friend. And as an older woman, I just want to encourage you, for you young ladies, get girlfriends, because you're going to need them, and you need them more in the years to come. There was a cute story I have about Anne and my friendship. Anne actually met my parents before she met me, and my mom and dad said to her, "I think you'd really like my daughter. You guys should get to know each other." And so we did, and there was an instant liking, but it's taken a lot of years of just building and working on that friendship to build the kind of friendship that we are privileged to have. We spoke at a retreat together a few years ago on friendship killers and friendship builders. And I don't have nearly enough time to talk all that I'd like to talk about on friendship today, so I'm not going to talk about the killers, but I want to pick four friendship builders to encourage us in our friendships today. And I hope they'll be helpful in us getting friends and in keeping friends. And the first one is, to have good friends, you need to be a good friend. That sounds rather simple, but it's so true. We need to be proactive, reach out, be willing to be the one to first reach out and not just wait for people to come to us. Friendships don't usually just happen. We need to give high priority to girlfriends, not over our husband and children, but perhaps over projects. And that's easier for some personalities than others. It happens to be easy for me because I don't really like to do projects. But one more story with Anne, because it just is so clear in my mind. My kids had gone off to school. They were probably in high school, and it was a Monday, and I was just ready. Summer was over. Summer just ended, and I was ready to really get in and get stuff done. And Anne stopped by, and she was crying because Taylor went off to kindergarten. And so we talked together, and I said, "Hey, let's just go to the beach." We had a wonderful day. I'll never remember what those projects were, but I won't forget that. And I think that was the beginning of really sealing our friendship. So make people more important than projects. We need to be available. I have a dear friend who I love and is so wise, but she's not very available. She's too busy, and it's just hard to be close because I never can spend time with her. We need to reach out. There's so many Bible verses that talk about that. They're very active. The one another's, love one another, serve one another, honor one another, be hospitable to one another, encourage one another, even exhort one another, speak the truth to one another in love. Put others' needs above our own. Do you see all the action? It's not passive, it's active. We were never meant to live in isolation. We need each other. And as we get older, as I said, we need each other more. I think we look to women to define ourselves in many ways. We need those friends. Our husbands can be and should be one of our best friends, but that doesn't replace girlfriends. Our husbands, I think, lack a certain intuitive awareness of things that females have. Tried to explain to my husband one time how to put on pantyhose, because this sounds really weird, but when you ride horses, if you wear pantyhose under your jeans, you won't get chafed. Girls just kind of know how to do it. He had not a clue. It's like this. Anyway, that's just a silly thing. I'm glad he didn't have a clue, actually. Our conversations, you know how they go from here to there and everywhere? But we get it, don't we? We need girlfriends for that. We need each other to get our words out so our husbands don't have to hear all our words. I've been struck just lately more with that phrase, I think it came from Nike, "just do it." When you have a thought and you have a person that you want to call or now email, text, whatever, compliment when you see them, just do it. Do it now, because usually we forget later. And often when it comes to your mind, it's so much what that person needs right now. This year I've had a fun time in my quiet time I've been using Jesus Calling, but God gave me this idea that every day to ask him, "Who today, Lord, would you like me to minister to?" And it's been so fun to hear as I listen a person's name that will come into my mind that maybe I never would have thought of. And if I do whatever I'm supposed to do right away, it's great. But if I don't, I realize I lose it. So that has been very, very helpful. Jonathan definitely pursued the relationship with David, didn't he? He was actively pursuing it. So besides making friendships a priority, a second friendship builder is a silly name that I thought of, but it's called pay attention to me or pay attention to your friends. Doesn't that sound like a little girl? They always want us to look, watch. I have little granddaughters, and they always want to twirl and dance and have me watch them. But aren't we like that too, really, on a shallow level? We like to be noticed when we get a new haircut or a new outfit, or maybe we've lost a few pounds, or have them not notice when we've gained a few pounds, or if we've done a good job at something. Are you a friend who pays sincere compliments freely? So often, I think we think things, but we just don't say them out loud. We need to learn to be lavish with genuine compliments, not flattery. It makes a person's day. Suzanne did that to me just when I walked up to her this morning. It takes such a little time, but it goes so far. And I was thinking, why don't we do it sometimes? Maybe we're just not in the practice of it. It doesn't come naturally. But I think another reason that we wouldn't really want to say, but it comes to that lovely word that Sherry talked about again, jealousy. We're afraid that if we say something to someone else, it may take away from us. We don't want them to look better or do a better job. And it's such an ugly thing, and I'm so ashamed of myself when I have those feelings. And I thought Jonathan was such a perfect example of a person who had such a lack of jealousy, and he was all for David. And I think as we practice saying those things and complimenting and being affirming, it actually takes away jealousy. Be the one to be willing to compliment first. On a deeper level, I think paying attention to a friend helps us know when something's wrong, when we're really observing them and caring them, looking at their expression, their moods. It helps us maybe intuitively know that something is not going on. It's not a magic thing. It comes with observing and caring. And again, some people have more a gift for that than others, but it can be developed. And one way is just plain asking, how are you today? And really meaning it. And then listening for it. I've learned that people can be really good actors. I'm pretty much the person, what you see is what you get. People usually know if something's wrong by my face. But I realize other people don't do that, and I need to delve deeper to really find out how they're doing. Don't assume everything is always okay, because often it is not. So ask, and then listen. And that is such an important thing in friendship. I heard the statement, you're a good listener when you care more to understand than to be understood. Isn't that hard? If you listen, people will want to be your friend, because there aren't that many good listeners around. And they will know that you care enough to suspend your own needs to hear theirs. I'm so grateful that I have friends like that. And when I go away on trips and I'm around people, I realize they haven't asked me one thing about myself. And I come home and have friends that do, and that is just so special. James says, be quick to hear and slow to speak. So besides paying attention, a third friendship builder is to be empathetic. Being there for others, friends who weep with you when you tell them hard things and sad things, and rejoice with you when you have good things. They show true joy, genuine joy when something good happens to you. Those are the friends I go to when I need love and support and when I don't want advice quite yet. Again, some will be more natural in this because it's their natural gifts, but we can all learn it. Anne has talked often and talks about sustained empathy, staying with someone's feelings as long as they need you to stay with them, and not jumping in with our story to try to identify with them. Because you know what? When someone's really hurting, they don't care about your story. They want to be able to tell theirs, and a good friend can stay with them. A good listener is just so important. People don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care. And I think this empathy also encompasses being an encourager. Don't you love to be around someone that just talks openly about their affection for you, encourages your special gifts, tell you they missed you, prays for you. Terry Pollock texted me the other day and said she was knows that I was working hard on this and was praying for me, and Diane and my small group did, and had several this morning just say, been praying, hope it goes well. And I just want to say something about that, since I'm not on your leadership team right now. Your leaders that work hard every week, it's a lot of work, and sometimes it looks easy because they just can get up here, but they have spent a lot of time, so encourage them. I've taught for years and years, and I still need that encouragement. So thank you, leaders, for all what you do each week. Sherry Ann and Christina's not here, and Terry for leading the team, and everyone else that has work here. Proverbs 27:9 says, perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of one's friends springs from his earnest counsel. We can be like perfume and incense to our friends as we encourage them. I had really encouraging friends. We had a young 16-year-old pregnant girl live with us a while ago and kept her for her pregnancy and when she gave her baby away for adoption. And I told the story in the Bible study I was in at the time, and I could watch the people who had this empathy and encouragement with tears in their eyes. And they came over, and one took her to a wild animal park. One helped sew a quilt for her. One took her shopping and bought her some clothes. One had her come over and play on the trampoline with their kids. And they encouraged her, but they so encouraged me in a really difficult endeavor. So good friends are encouragers, and they encourage us in the walk that we are taking. I had a friend who was also encouraged me by being strong with me. She saw that I was being negative in something, and it was influencing her. And so she called me on it, and she was so right. And I realized why I was doing it and why it was wrong, and I stopped. So I thought sometimes we need friends to encourage us to do the right thing. And I love this quote. It says, true friends help us grow even when we'd prefer to stay right where we are. That's true. And last quality I just want to mention briefly, and that is the ability to survive the rough spots. I think I've seen many precious friendships have been lost because people weren't able to make it through the tough times. They're either too hurt, too prideful, maybe not forgiving, oversensitive. And I thought, you know, we and women have this beautiful quality of being sensitive, which is a wonderful thing, but we also have the bad quality of being oversensitive. And sometimes I want to say to myself and to others, just get over yourself. Don't you think we need that sometimes? Jonathan sure got over himself, didn't he? He just let it all go to David. What we have to decide when we come to a rough spot is the friendship worth fighting for? Is it worth working hard to make it through the tough times? Sometimes maybe it's not, but if it is, I encourage us to fight for it. I had a friend, a dear friend, who we'd been friends for many years, and our husbands had some issues where they weren't spending any time together, and she came over one day and said, I'm going to fight for our friendship. I'll never forget that. And because we were willing to do that, we had 5 more years of a beautiful friendship. And then God took her home to heaven through because of cancer. And I thought, what if I would have lost all those years because we weren't willing to fight for it? So that was just a great lesson to me. 3 ways, keys to working through these rough spots, which are just really brief, sorry. One is obviously forgiveness. That is such a key. And I'm going to be speaking again in a few weeks, and that's the topic, so I'm going to deal with that then. So I'm not going to say much more, but just forgiveness is such a gift. It's a gift to the person, and it's a gift to yourself. We need to be lavish with forgiveness. And secondly, don't be oversensitive. Let things go. Some things just don't matter enough that we make them matter. Being right is not always the highest value. Kindness can be a higher value than being right. And then thirdly, a little different tack, give space in our relationships for other friendships, for your friends to have other friends. I think we all love to have a group, and none of us like to be left out. That's one of my weaknesses. I hate to be left out of things, but you know what? We always will be, so get over it. I'm 66, and I still struggle with that, and it's time to grow up. Be happy for our friends when they branch out to other friends, when they branch out in new ministries, and encourage them in that. And my time is about up. I could talk on friendship forever, but I hope that these just four things are helpful, making friendships a priority, paying attention to our friends, being empathetic and encouraging, and working through the rough spots. I really think one of the main things is to be proactive in pursuing those friendships. And as you go to your groups today, I think that would be a neat thing to talk about, of maybe these four things and other qualities that you've learned that makes a good friend. And I also want to recognize that friendships can come in lots of different packages, in different ages. I think some of our best friends are usually about in our life stage, but they can also come with younger, older, and don't, your friends, your kids' friends, don't miss out on some of those opportunities. And some come just for a season, and then there's those that last for a lifetime. Jonathan and David modeled to us in our lesson today such a beautiful friendship. And it reminds us, too, of the friendship we can have with God. And this has not been a talk on marriage, but I just want to add that we don't want to neglect our husband as we're pursuing girlfriends. What if we put all these principles I've just mentioned into our marriage with our husband and made him important? And pray for him. I've been teaching a marriage class, and in the book we were reading, it said, you pray for your husband and his needs as much as you pray for your friends. And that really hit me, because I thought, like, friends give me prayer requests and I'll pray for them. But do I sit down and pray specifically for my husband? And I realized I was really lacking in that. And that's being a good friend to our husband when we have one. My parents modeled for me a good marriage. They wasn't perfect, but they were committed. They assigned it a high priority. And they now have a dear friendship in their 90s. And it is truly for better or for worse in sickness and in health. And in this case, in sickness of my mom. And someone took a beautiful video of them. That was a student working at a college nearby, and I thought I would like to close with that because it's about my parents and it's about our marriages, but we may not have our spouses at that time and maybe we'll be the ones helping each other through the later years. So Leslie's going to just show a very short video of what friendship means in the 90s.
Bingo!
Marriage has a way of getting better. And in this sense, the best life is a life that's invested in someone else. It's not a life that's invested in yourself. And therefore, and that's what love is placing the welfare of the other ahead of your own. When we first moved here, we moved into an apartment, and at that time, Jean was failing a bit, and then as things got worse, and I could no longer do those kinds of things, then she moved into the health center, and that was almost 2 years ago when that happened, but I'm with her most of the time during the day. So I do different things. We read and we go out like we did yesterday for a ride in the car and so forth.
How many days will he have to wait in this house? Oh my goodness, here's a whole page of Spanish. We'll skip that. I'll just give you the meaning, okay?
She sometimes says, I want to go home. And I have to tell her, home is where we are together. So home is sort of movable. So when we're in her room, that's home. And when we're in the apartment, that's home. But home is me together.
Where will we be going? To Portland. Good. Or to Torbay.
The best life is one invested in another. I love that statement of my dad. And so as we go to our groups, just appreciate one another. Think of friendship as being a refreshing cup of tea and see if we can be that refreshment to others in our lives. Thank you.